Welcome. Thanks for joining us. My name is Dr. Umbreen Nahal. I'm the host of the podcast Vision to Value at the intersection of healthcare, business, society, and leadership. This podcast resumes after a hiatus with an episode I recorded previously with Catherine McCord, who is an unusual human who specializes in unusual humans, meaning she specializes in placing diverse and neurodiverse talent. Neurodiversity simply means having a brain that is wired differently. I was one of the lucky ones as a little girl, identified as gifted and talented, but many other little girls like me ended up with very different adult outcomes. The right or wrong label can change a life in terms of the supports given and outcomes achieved. It is for this reason that I'm outspoken about the need to reform professionalism and HR to support everyone to thrive. This episode is particularly meaningful for me because I do credit my late mother with nurturing me and developing my self-confidence. I lost my mother nearly 2 years ago, and subsequently, I learned that I had been misdiagnosed with a common women's health condition that was extremely treatable, and I'm now thankfully in much better health after having had surgery. But it underscores the importance of recognizing what is going on, creating accommodations, and allowing every single human to reach their maximum potential. So let's get started. Welcome, Catherine. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so very much for having me today. I'm excited to be here.
So you are a leader in the human resources space. I know that we connected based on some conversations around diversity and in particular around neurodiversity. Right. Can you share with us how you got into that space?
Absolutely. It's my favorite topic in diversity and one of my favorite topics surrounding recruiting. I am neurodiverse, which is something I didn't realize because I didn't really know what that was for many years. And over the years, the different people that fit into the broad definition of neurodiversity always just seem to have superpowers to me, always had these amazing, cool abilities. And some of them I didn't quite know what to do with at that point in my professional career, but I could still just tell that they were incredible people with so many talent, realized these are the people that you could use to innovate and that these are the people that you could use to take your business a whole new direction that you never even thought of. I spent a lot of my career working with smaller businesses, so you have to kind of get creative, right? Mm-hmm. And so those were kind of the people that we went to. Recently read an article in Harvard Business Reviews acknowledging the quote superpowers of the neurodiverse community.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's a very real thing. And I think that's why of all the types of diversity, neurodiversity is kind of my favorite. And it's not even about me. It's about the whole community and the different kind of traits that come with it.
Absolutely. So listening to you, I think one thing that I'm hearing is that you were noticing this pattern of who were the problem solvers when you needed innovation and you needed something a little bit out of box.
Right. Absolutely. People keep trying to put people in this box or, you know, this position at this job when it comes to hiring is there's this tendency to say, this is exactly what I need for this position. Don't do that. Don't form this whole image of who you need to hire because that's going to actually stunt your hiring. Just say, this is the problem that we need solved and look as broadly as you can.
And it's one of the other reasons I wanted to talk to you is I'm working on a workforce development, better matching algorithm to get around some of these things you're describing. So I know.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So I know that you've done some work on applicant ATS. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. The applicant tracking system. And for anybody that doesn't know, it's a CRM for HR. That's how we track our people. That's where your application goes. A CRM is basically a customer management software. And, right. And so this is kind of the equivalent of that. Basically, this is our catch-all for our applicant for both the front end and the back end. So things that the applicant sees and things that they don't. Historically, they create incredible bias and they create problems in the hiring process, especially for the neurodiverse community. Now, not exclusive to the neurodiverse community. Mm-hmm. It is definitely a problem. And it's, I've seen it for years and years. And so about a year and a half ago, I was on the way to the airport at 4:30 in the morning. Click, there it is. I said, I know how to fix this. Amazing. And I just dove in and spoke to everybody I could in every group that has experienced discrimination, that might have experienced discrimination in the application process, that have dealt with the application process. And I got all this feedback and compiled it. And a lot of my work was geared towards the neurodiverse community because they're a much bigger percentage of the population than people think. And so I wanted everything to be friendly to them. I've not particularly struggled, but my sister has, my husband has, my top advisor with my applicant tracking system is an autistic gentleman who lives in the UK and is fascinating human. He's been caught in the quote ATS trap just time and time again. And Dan Roth, who's an amazing, amazing neurodiverse human who during COVID decided he wanted to help people get jobs and just out of caring for other humans developed LinkedIn family called Job Connection Tuesday.
So tell me a little bit about how he helps people get jobs and bypass some of these barriers.
For him, it's creating connection in a friendly environment. So he set a culture up, then just has everybody post and connect and personally goes through, hundreds of messages a day.
Wow.
And his particular neurodiversity allows him to do that without too much stress because he is actually ADHD and he'll talk about it openly. So I know he wouldn't mind me sharing that. That's kind of his superpower is he can do all these connections and it doesn't stress him out. And he will actually go through and say, okay, this is what you have going on. This is your superpower. You match over here. So for him, this isn't really scalable, but for him, it's about a personal connection in a community that all understands each other.
Pausing on what you just said, I post a lot about empathy. There's a book written by a Yale professor, Paul Bloom, that's called Against Empathy, which is deliberately provocative. And it talks about exactly what you're talking about, is that empathy is not scalable.
Right.
And it depends on that individual. It depends on the individual's bandwidth. And personally, while I do not have a diagnosis of ADHD, despite actually having gotten neurocognitive tested, because I certainly have traits of it, I know that I am like what you're describing. I can consume so many messages from so many channels simultaneously, and I can immediately respond and be coherent and write essays. And this actually has been both a blessing, and that's partly why I've been a top voice on LinkedIn multiple times, because I can literally be frustrated with a medical emergency that happened on the airplane, be walking off the airplane with my bag trailing behind me and posting in a coherent way that then turns into a top trending article.
Right. Which is incredible. That's your superpower.
Yeah, but it's also every superpower, every strength has its downside. In a Zoom, WhatsApp, text world, it is so easy for me to communicate. I know that what I do in person and what I do online is effective. So I get this positive feedback cycle. And then when I come across people, if their brain is wired opposite to mine,
right,
I become a source of stress. And then that is very ineffective. And so this is one of the things I've been really trying to work on and understand at mid-career is how do you read the room when your room is virtual and it's all over the world?
Right. I think for me, I've been asked a lot about the virtual workplace because my company has been virtual since 2014. So this is not new for me. And what I share with people is it really comes down to, I know this is going to sound almost contrary, but it really does work. It's just letting everybody do it the way that they need to do it. Mm-hmm. And people go, well, that's not going to work because then but it does. When you just stop and say, okay, we're going to have a Zoom, but if you don't need to be on camera, if that's not something that works for you, don't. Mm-hmm. Just be here, be part of the conversation. Or if you know this person likes email better than text, well, then you just email that person. And it seems it would be difficult to keep up with, but it's not because our human brain creates patterns so quickly That if you teach yourself to do that a couple of times, then it's just habit and then everything still just flows. Yeah, it gives people a chance to tell you what they need, but still get the information communicated efficiently.
Daniel Kahneman talks about this, the Nobel Prize winning behavioral economist, is that we spend 95% of our time in what he calls system one or fast thinking, using pre-existing models that we have developed. Right. And we are getting constant new information, but the efficiency that you're talking about that we all love and business is absolutely love, that's the tension, is that we are rewarded for being efficient. We have memories of positive feedback, and yet our world is changing. We are encountering people who have diversity that may be masked because it's socially appropriate to mask it.
Right.
There's all this controversy these days about the physical mask, but we never talk about the psychological or the invisible masks that people have been wearing for years.
Right. And I'm so excited that I'm starting to see those, a lot of those conversations come up. And one of the things that I find fascinating is that when you combine all of these different groups that can be considered neurodiverse, which just means that your brain processes information differently from the quote norm. That's right. All that means. So when you combine all of these different groups, it's just shy of a third of the population.
Wow.
And that's all different kinds. The more stereotypically neurodiverse is only about 15 to 18% of the population. And it's real hard to, of course, to get exact numbers on that.
That's still so large. I mean, that's still almost
it one is. Five. It is. And so when you stop and you look at that, okay, so if we're not working with these people, we're just automatically cutting out a huge percentage of the population. And there are two articles that I read. One again was Harvard Business Review. And another one, I believe, was The New Yorker, talking about the most brilliant people, the people that are, you know, like in Time Magazine and all that, vast majority of them are neurodiverse.
Yeah.
So if you exclude that community, you're excluding some of the most extraordinary people that are on this planet.
And to pause right there, actually, to pause and just to emphasize what you just said. So for instance, there's a lot of controversy about Elon Musk. Some people love him, some people not so much, right? But
right.
He acknowledges that he's autistic. And and I have learned from adult autistics that that is the preferred term. And this was something that I had to learn because as a pediatrician, I spent most of my career interacting with the parents who preferred children with special healthcare needs. They wanted to avoid the term because they don't have the same brain. And so there's this inherent tension in the community between parents and those who are actually experiencing it, who experience the world very differently than their parents. And once they become adults, they're like, no, I'm not ashamed of my brain. I love my brain. I just want the world to let me be me. And how many Elon Musks are there that are not getting the ability to innovate and improve society?
100%. Because people don't, it's like, oh, they're different. Or
one of the things that I've learned is, and I've been very rule following, gotten through the gatekeepers, and then at mid-career been like, huh, I think I have these traits that I can lean into, which seem to advance me faster than my peers. But I know that early in my career, I was not confident in them and I was suppressing them.
Right.
What is not understood about autism and neurodiversity is that when you are living in a world that's not designed for you, whether it's the lights or the sounds, you are constantly being stimulated in noxious ways that cause you these symptoms that will interfere with your ability to work.
Right.
And it's not that I'd have to read up on this more, and there's experts on this. I read somewhere that one of the reasons why autistics avoid eye contact is because it's too intense for them.
Yes.
And
yes,
so
I was going to say my husband will tell you that. Now he's gotten very good at what he calls faking it, and doing well, but it actually does, because he spends too much time being confused, for him at least, being confused and trying to, or not being confused by, but trying to analyze the look on your face, because he processes all of that differently.
Yes.
And so to try to translate that then he can't focus on you. So it does him better to just listen to you and not look at you.
And the interesting thing in what you're saying is that I think because we bucket so much, we are like, okay, you are, you know, X, you are Y, you are 1, 2, 3. In fact, once we start to think about neurodiversity or just diversity more broadly, you also become more tolerant across the board. So there are many cultures where it's normal not to look in the eye. It's more respectful if somebody is like your boss or of an opposite gender, or whatever reason. And we don't need to judge or even know why. Right. But it's about having that ability to observe a pattern and not go into judgment like, oh, why is this person odd? Rather go into, is there something that I can do to make this an effective communication so we can get to that efficiency in the workplace and so we can extract the full talent for that efficiency and delivery and innovation that you're talking about?
100%. And it's, I love that you touched on that because one of the biggest things that I've been trying to teach over the last couple of years or several years to companies with whom I work, my client companies on the recruiting side, is that it's not the candidate's job to be good at interviewing, it's ours. So if you're interviewing a neurodiverse candidate, it is your responsibility as the one interviewing them to help them bring out the best part of them. That is your job, not theirs.
You're
the professional interviewer. You know, it's like a doctor is expecting a patient to diagnose themselves. That doesn't make any sense.
Sure. I think the thing is that it's going to be so unconventional to most people that they might disregard it. You have to get at the value proposition. The value proposition is we're in a disrupted world. There is a great resignation. Your company will cease to operate, cease to generate revenue, cease to exist even.
Yes.
If you do not address this talent gap, and if you are not, to your point, if you are the professional interviewer, and if you become the barrier to what your company may actually need to innovate and excel and even merely exist in a disrupted world, why are you being paid your salary?
Right. Yes. Yeah. Then you need to go. You're a dinosaur. You need to go. And I will say too,
I would say not even dinosaur, because I think that a lot of young folks entering their careers, like I did, look at what the incentives are, look at what the rules are and replicate. So I think
that is true. Yeah.
We actually, again, need to explore our mental models.
And to your point about the value proposition too, one thing people always ask me is, well, why do I need diversity? I'm so great, or my staff is so great. Why do I not just want to replicate them over and over and over again?
Sure.
And I tell them the very, very short version of that is that it has been proven. And in fact, there was even a study by Boston Consulting Group recently about this that shows that you will increase your revenue by about 19% a year, and you will increase your innovation and drastically increase your customer satisfaction. That goes up by over 50% with diversity.
Wow.
And so if you're not hitting on that, you're losing money, your customers are less happy, and you have less innovation in your company. And if you don't see the problem there, you should not be in business. Just flat out, you should not be in business. So
and the pandemic,
there's true value.
100%. And the pandemic may actually just weed those people and those companies out. So
I hope so.
So I think I think that's a great place to end, although I think it's a little bit of a threat to business.
If you want to do better, reach out to people that can help you do better. You know,
like
you don't
that.
Have well, to be stuck well, in the past.
We'll end on a positive note about the fact that these are unrecognized barriers. There's been a underutilization of talent. There's money being left on the table. There is risk management that you are not engaging in. And there's opportunity because there are people like you who exist in the world who are specialized in this and can, and you're not the only one. So educate yourself, hire the talent you need, hire the consultants you need, and do better, right?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Just grow, do better, and improve your business. It works for everybody.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so very much for having me. This has been a great conversation. I enjoyed it.